up, hobby friends, and welcome back to Paint Bravely, a podcast where you can find a little bit of encouragement, discover new ways to make your hobby more fun, and most importantly, learn to paint bravely. All right, we got a pretty good episode today. We just got back from Adepticon 2024. It was a good time, and I know we both have a good amount to talk about from that, and some videos we've been making, some other fun painting things, you know, all the things. But Brent, what have you been up to since we got back?
Oh, same old, I'd say. Nah, I've been painting lizards. which isn't
same old. Yeah,
isn't too off character, I don't think. So This time I've got the crocodiles from Crocodile Games, and this was one of the few things that I actually bought at Adepticon. We got lots of little samples here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I actually bought was a pack of Sebeki nippers. And the nippers are what you call a young crocodile. They're just little guys.
They just nip at you, yeah.
Yep. So I've got the nippers, and they're all running around with soup bowls because they're hanging around the stew pot. And there's one big gator. He's got his apron on, and he's, like, mixing up a stew pot. And there's a little guy. Mm-hmm. His name is Niblet. This is the smallest croc. His name Niblet. And he's standing next to the soup pot. He's got his little spoon. And, it was time to paint some crocodiles.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's been keeping me busy, I'd say.
Man, I went pretty hard at the Crocodile Games booth this year.
Yeah?
I ended up, I bought one of the rule books for the Egyptus game, which I hadn't had previously. I have the Olympus one.
Mm-hmm.
I bought like a Hecate model that looks like Marathi, which we'll get into later, and like probably 15 other blisters of minis. And I did get that little croc with the spoon.
Yeah, they had...
So, not bad.
The red tags were buy four for the price of three, right? Buy three, get one free?
Yeah, basically. So I did that like three times.
And then you got a free hungry croc. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Free hungry croc for, you know, going through all the blisters and buying a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Mostly, I'm hoping to paint them. I have now successfully painted one Crocodile Games miniature.
Which one?
That's it. The Hecate model. So I'm working on this video where I'm like finally getting to my Marathi project. I painted the big one. The GW one, and it looks cool. And I did not paint the smaller one because she like transforms mid game and you swap out the model.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, like mechanic. And I have the really old one that Chris, who owns Crocodile Games, sculpted. Mm-hmm. Originally. And it actually says Marathi on the little standee tag.
Cool.
Which, I mean, it's supposed to. He said it is, but, I mean, people have said in the past, like, that's not Marathi. That's a dark elf sorceress or whatever. It's like, it might have been at one point when they're like, no, we're changing. We're doing different Marathi or whatever, but it still is. And the Hecate model is, like, really close to that model, but sculpted 20-something years later.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, a really refined, nicer looking version that's obviously not exactly the same but very similar. So I wanted to paint all of those up, and so I finished it today.
Yep. That is cool to see. I will be interested in taking a look at the Marathis through the ages there. But
yeah. The only issue is that since he no longer works for Games Workshop, some of the models have less clothes on them to reflect the Greek goddess and god nature of things. And so I have to use blur lines or black bars. I'm not sure yet. I filmed a lot of it, but I tried to, like, you know, not film it at the same time. So
put some tasteful blur in there. Yeah.
Tasteful.
Yeah.
Not the one that you can basically see everything through it, but yeah we'll see.
Yeah.
I haven't figured that out yet.
This is Chris Fitzpatrick Fitz, and yeah, he sculpted a lot of the Dark Elves for GW 20 years ago, and mm-hmm. also some of the Dark Eldar. including some famous sculpts. I think the Asdrubale Vect pleasure barge was his work.
It in fact was,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So very reminiscent of those models in particular. Yeah. Yes.
So a lot of fierce dark Eldar and dark elven ladies, but also cute little crocodiles and also some yetis. Once I finish painting up my crocodiles, I think the next time I'm at a convention and Crocodile Games is there, I think it'll be time for yetis. Yeah.
I mean, there's a good chance, too, that they'll be there. They seem to go to a lot of conventions.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I'm finally getting into crocodiles because the new Proacryl Signature Series from Rogue Hobbies is actually a lot of fun. So, Proacryl, you know, they put out their core line of paints, and then they've been doing expansions like 6 bottles at a time. So they reach out to Vince or Ninjon or whatever and say, "Give me 6 new colors. What do we need? What's not in the line yet? What would be useful to folks? What would be useful to you?" And so a lot of those signature series are like, "Okay, here's the next 6 bottles of paint from Proacryl." And realistically, like depending on what you like to do at your painting desk, like 2 or 3 of the colors are ones that you'll actually use. But what I like about what Luis did, the Rogue Hobby Signature Series, is she just got like a color wheel. She just went bright, vibrant colors around the color wheel, and not perfectly centered on, you know, the 3 sort of primaries and the 3 sort of secondaries. Yeah. But so, you know, there's a teal in there. There's, you know, kind of an indigo sort of color. There's a hot pink, but if you arrange the 6 in a color wheel, it's a pretty good color wheel. Anyway, they all kind of go together, and all 6 of them are viable colors for lizards. And so it was just a good combination, and that's what I've been working on, is just doing sweet color transitions on lizards, giving them different color scales, trying stuff out, mixing things. It's been keeping me busy.
I mean, I can imagine. I think you ended up with, 25 of them? Something like that?
No, I don't have that many.
It was a lot.
No, I've only got like...
Count them up.
I've only got 8 of the little crocs, but before I even started Goobertown Hobbies, I bought some big crocs, so I...
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
I think it might be 18 total. Okay.
Okay. I was close. Just throwing it out there. That's a lot of crocs.
A lot of crocs.
Well, good. I got a long way to catch up. I only have the 1, so, you know.
Just the hungry little fella.
He's
just a little guy. He looks super sad because he's holding up an empty bowl. He needs soup too, you know?
Yeah, don't they all? The crocodiles love soup.
It is known,
It is known. I really like those the expansion boxes, like from all the paint companies that do it. I like it when it's like, oh, here's something specifically for skin.
Yes. You know,
for this color skin, whatever. And it's a whole set of that. It's like 6 paints usually. I like that because I like when it works all together and it's like, oh, somebody sat down and went, this is a good base, this is a good mid, this is a good highlight, whatever, these mixed together.
Yep.
And like it feels like the right way to do it, I guess. I don't know. It's a little weird. But I like those sets. They're good, and I'm glad that Monument is taking that and doing something cooler with it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The other new release around the same time was from Flameon Miniatures. And apparently it is 6 bottles of paint designed to do a sweet non-metallic metal gold effect.
Yes.
But to me, it just looks like, oh, there's a couple of good browns in there. Like I'll use that brown and I'll use browns, that brown and there's a dark yellow. Brown. Got a yellow. Yeah. Got
but
a, got
but that's
ivory.
Exactly the kind of set, right? It's like here are the colors that you could just go pick out off your shelf, right? Any of these colors that are close enough will do the thing. But having an example of like, oh, well, here's what this non-metallic metal can look like with just these paints. And they're pre-picked out. you know, the vibrancy and the, you know, the color and everything is all picked out for you. It's like, well, now I have less thinking to do. Like, I don't have to go, well, maybe my brown is too dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bottom brown I have, or maybe the yellow I have is too white. You know what I mean? So like it does narrow your focus a little bit. Like his set in particular being just, this is non-metallic metal gold.
Yep.
It's like, well, good. That means I know that I can technically achieve the same look that he can, you know, from this box. Not necessarily fully, but, you know, something decent that actually makes sense.
It takes away your excuses. Yeah.
Like, yes.
You definitely have all the paints you need on your desk right here, right now.
Exactly. Huh. They come in this box. You have nothing to complain about. You should just try
it. Yeah. And it is, you know, part of a lesson kind of curated for you of like, here, mm-hmm. here's the stuff you need. Try this, see what you can do. And perhaps someday I'll get there. But for now, for now, there's a nice, you know, a green brown that I've been using on the bases of the Crocs. And there's a like a yellow brown that I've been using for the bowls. they're soup bowls. Yeah.
That makes sense. Nice clay bowl. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And yeah, you know, even if you can't do non-metallic metal gold, still some good browns in there. Still some good browns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So the news from Adepticon is that, similar to last year, the line at the Monument Hobbies booth was very long and like disrupting the entire aisle.
Just a line completely down an entire aisle. That's covering multiple booths.
Yeah.
I mean, is that mostly, I mean, I think it's a good thing generally, but is that mostly considered a bad thing, like for people at conventions? Like, if there's a big line in front of your booth, are you upset? Is that a thing?
I don't know. It depends if you're able to kind of pitch them while you've got them held right there. They can't go anywhere. They're not going to lose their spot in line.
You've got them sitting there. I don't know.
Hey, like, come over here, little boy. Do you like the Wendigo or do you like the crocodiles?
I want the Yetis. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sell you this pack of Yetis for $40. What do you say?
I mean, Yetis for $40. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And I don't know. It depends how proactive you are. If there's a big old Pro Acryl line just draped across your vendor hall.
So you're in line for some paints.
Yeah.
Well, you maybe need some minis for them paints.
You got anything to paint with them paints? Yeah.
Yeah, start asking what sets they're looking for. Oh, non-metallic metal, huh? Well, check out this guy. He's in a big armor suit, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, I painted their soup bowls, you know, brown, but you could paint them. You could paint them metal. I bet you could.
Yeah. Yeah, you get that, like, what is it, the metal flake on the top, the Egyptian, like, inlay, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's not bad.
We're obviously just kidding. The Pro Acryl booth was nowhere near the crocodile booth.
No, it wasn't. No.
I can't remember.
Maybe it should have been.
I can't remember who suffered the consequences for the Pro Acryl line.
Bombshell Minis, I think, was right there. And then, oh man, I'm forgetting. A couple other people. Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't think I've done this year yet, but last year, like a week after I got back from the convention, the videos of people doing the like walkthrough of the vendor hall started popping up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat there and watched like a 20-minute walkthrough of a place that no longer exists that I was just at last week.
You're right. Like, oh yeah.
It's just like,
I was there.
I remember that booth. Yeah. They had a good booth this year. Yeah.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I watched, I think, a couple of them. Like, I scrubbed through it mostly, but it's a weird thing. I don't know. It's funny because, like, I think I was more tired this year at the end of it than I have been the other couple of years. Like, I was destroyed. Like, we did a lot of walking.
We did.
I did calculate it. It was between 6 and 10 miles a day of just walking. And a lot of that was standing.
Fair.
Yeah. But, you know, so it's like, it's almost like going to Disneyland and just walking around for like 6 days in a row.
Yeah.
It's kind of nuts.
Yeah. So if you didn't go to the convention, if you're listening in and didn't go to the convention, you will have seen that all of social media for the past several weeks was just flooded with this one convention in America, in the Chicago area. And the reason for that is that it is a big industry convention. It is, people are convening a lot of people in the industry are convening, learning stuff, getting excited about the hobby again. Sometimes releasing new products like the Pro Acryl line was because that was an early release of those new Signature Series boxes. That's why the line was there.
3 or 4 weeks or something, by a couple of weeks kind of thing. But
But no, it's a time where people are getting excited and they're learning a lot about what's going on in the hobby for the next year. And so that's why we're talking about it. And that's also why we were so busy and so tired. Like we got there Wednesday. Technically, the convention is like Thursday to Sunday. We got there the day before and we left the day after. And all six of those days, we were just as busy as we could possibly be.
Yeah.
You know, we had a hotel room in the convention hall, but we spent as much time as possible outside of the room, just walking around, hanging out with people, meeting folks. Somehow neither of us got con crud, which is pretty awesome and
it's
lucky.
Kind of nuts, actually.
So if you were one of the like 100 of people we hung out with and you got sick, it wasn't from us. Like, just to be clear, not from us.
Not from us. I got COVID last year, and I know from who. I will not say.
Yeah. we know some of the people who got COVID last year. You know, we've got guesses, but
I got a good guess. Who did it? Anyways,
but we were meeting a lot of people. We could have been super spreaders, you know, but there's only so many times a day you can wash a hand, you know.
I was like actively trying to keep that in mind too, and every chance I got, I was like hand sanitizer thing, washing my hands. Like, I tried, I really did, and it worked out. So that's cool. Good to know.
Good to know.
But. Yeah. Being so tired at the end, like coming back and then seeing those videos pop up, I was like, oh yeah, maybe I should just watch this to see it without also like being tired.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh yeah, okay. Like, I remember this, and now it's in like a weirdly different way. So it makes sense to like want to then go back and see that, you know. It's like, yeah, no, that's a big convention. There's a lot of people here. Like, it's a lot of stuff to see, a lot of stuff that I don't remember seeing.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, it was a big convention. Like, I don't know if it was the biggest Adepticon ever, but it was definitely the biggest since COVID. So the first time I went was 2 years ago. So this was our third time going, and it seems like it got bigger every year. But it was packed. Mm-hmm. Like, I heard something about 8,000 people, where it's normally like a convention for 5,000 people. Like, it
felt like that.
Yeah, it was packed. It was busy. Mostly in the good way, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly wasn't like too overpacked that you couldn't still just walk around and look at stuff. But, you know, you were definitely having to skirt through like a middle section where booths on either side with people in front were kind of blocking you. So you had to go through, sometimes wait for the other person to be done going through, and then you go through. So it was definitely a lot of people. It was pretty nuts. Yeah. I'm still tired, man. I'm still tired.
Oh. I caught back up on sleep and started painting lizards. You just gotta keep rolling with the energy. But.
I got home. Oh my God, I almost forgot. My flight home was awful.
Oh, okay.
I forgot. I literally, that's how tired I still am. No, like, okay. Here we go.
Story time. Right. Story time. Buckle up, friends. Yeah.
All right. So Brent and Trent and I, Trent from Miscast, we all Uber to the airport together. And there's another story involved in there that we will circle back around to that's very good. But after that, we part ways because, you know, we got to get to our flights, right? I get to my flight, and the first one is delayed, right? For some reason, whatever. Then my flight gets changed to a new gate. So I have to run across the entire airport, like into wherever you were waiting, I think.
All right. All right.
And then they switched it again. And I had to go all the way back to like a different gate in the other terminal.
Uh-huh.
And it's still delayed. And now it's delayed even more.
Right.
And there's obviously people we're moving in this pack. Right.
Yeah.
And then we get there and, ends up being that the plane that we have is broken.
Right.
And so it's delayed again. And they're like, we're going to get you a new plane. You know, we're going to get you home. Maybe this will take a little, it's fine. It's not a big deal. End up going to like the terminal that's under construction and sitting in the terminal. And there's like a captain is there and he's the only one there. And he's like, okay, so I just started my shift. And turns out this plane is broken also. They sent us to the wrong terminal, including him. And he's like telling everybody this over the intercom. And he's like, it could be like 6 hours. They got to check this plane out and see if it's fit to fly. Cause it's like every so often each plane has to go through like this 6 hour checkup process to make sure it's not going to crash. Right. It's fine. Makes perfect sense. But they sent us to a plane that was in the middle of that and a little bit lucky. We ended up like being able to have dinner, whatever, come back. And he's like, okay, maybe 3 or 4 hours now. We're not sure. They're supposed to call me. I don't know.
Is this getting to be like 10 o'clock at night at this point? Or?
Oh yeah. No, I didn't leave until something like that, like 10:30, 10:45, I think.
Okay.
So then like randomly he goes, oh, okay. Actually this plane is done now and we're going to start boarding in like 45 minutes. Like we're waiting for the rest of the flight crew. It's like, fine. Okay. So we finally get on the plane and I'm usually sat in the back cause I like being in the back near the bathrooms in the aisle, whatever. It's just less of a hassle with people moving back and forth weirdly. And we start pulling out. Everybody's feeling good, right? And all of a sudden, as we're going towards the runway, this woman and her husband get up and they start yelling. And like the woman comes back and starts talking to one of the flight attendants about how this dude next to them is like drunk. And he's grabbing at her and he's saying stuff. And the husband's like about ready to fight this guy. And they have to calm them down. And they basically, I'm hearing this because I'm right next to the area where they sit.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so they call to the captain and basically get the order that like, we're going to turn this plane around. We're going to go back to the terminal and we're going to get the police and they're going to remove him from this flight. But everybody be cool so we don't upset him. So they're having this conversation back here. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Okay. Well, it's going to be delayed even more. This is wonderful. Like, I don't have anybody waiting to pick me up on the other end of this, whatever. So they take the long way around because they have to go through traffic now. And after another half an hour, we do a big circle. And end up back at the same spot. And the captain opens the door and comes out. And they open the side door. And people come in and basically tell this guy, like, you're not flying on this plane. Like, you need to leave. This is not an option. Like, you have to get off. And, like, luckily the dude was, like, he was super drunk. But
yeah.
Cooperative.
Okay.
And he got off and there wasn't like any more of an incident. But like, come on, man. Like everybody's already super delayed. He had like a big gulp cup filled with some kind of hard alcohol that he had purchased at the airport.
Wow, that sounds very expensive, but good on him.
Yeah, no, he went for it. So yeah, they got him off the plane, and the people sat down, and there were no more incidents. But I didn't get home till like 2:30 in the morning.
Okay, this is Tuesday morning, and the convention ended Sunday night. Yeah,
correct.
Okay,
correct.
Okay,
yeah, and we got to the airport at like what, 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
On Tuesday or Monday? Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. If the airline is going to delay their flight by like 4 hours, that puts stress on people, and eventually someone's going to snap or spend 4 hours drinking.
Yeah. Well, the captain came over the intercom again. He's like, hey, look, like, I have to apologize because I knew that this dude may have been a problem, but like, honestly, everybody obviously wants to get home.
Yeah.
And I kind of maybe figured he'd pass out and go to sleep or something, and it wouldn't be an issue. Because, like, I saw the guy coming up behind the captain. He was trying to, like, talk his ear off for a good hour.
Oh, okay.
Probably being, yeah. So I think he was kind of, like, trying to control that. But then, obviously, he gets shut into the cockpit, and nobody else knows what's going on, theoretically, you know. So, yeah, man. That sucks. Oh, that's 2 years in a row that I've been delayed by a good long amount of time trying to get home.
Yeah, last year you got to spend some time in Houston, right? That's pretty good.
It was either Houston or Dallas. I literally don't know. For like 8 hours, yeah.
But the convention is worth the hassle of travel.
Yes,
and
it is.
And it's mostly Casey who has the unfortunate stories. So
it's true. Yeah. I got direct flights this year. I was so happy. Like this time it's not like I had to stop somewhere. I didn't have to get to a gate and maybe miss my flight or anything. No. No, it just happened to go this way. It was fun. Yeah. Also, Caleb Wisenbach was on my flight. I didn't see him till way later.
Yeah.
But he was definitely on my flight. So he had to go through that too.
Oh, you guys can reminisce the next time you see each other.
Yeah.
Hey, remember that drunk a-hole on her flight?
Yeah.
Took it from a 4-hour delay to a 6-hour delay. Remember that?
After they trashed our plane and then gave us another trash plane and made us wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, if that airline is going to delay the flight by 4 hours, like, you can do a lot of drinking in 4 hours. Like, that's the problem.
I assume that's really what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe he'd already had a few, and then, like, he's like, oh, I'm going to be here for a while.
He's
so
on pace to, like, be feeling good by the time he gets to Reno. But
yeah. Just getting started. Everything's still open when we got there.
Whoops.
Except he did not get there.
Whoops.
He was removed from that airplane.
Yeah, well, boy, I hope he got home okay.
As far as I knew and what I was hearing the flight attendant say is he's not going to be allowed to fly United ever again. Like, he is now blacklisted from United flights.
Seems like a teachable moment for the rest of us.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, oh yeah, okay.
In addition to airport booze being way too expensive, like, it's... There are hidden costs as well. Yeah.
Hidden costs.
If you can't handle your airport booze.
Don't get into a fight with your, like, you know, passenger friends sitting in the chairs next to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad idea. Yeah. So that was fun.
Well, speaking of bitter disappointments, how was the bit seller this year, Casey?
That's a good segue. I like it. You know, it wasn't great this year, honestly. Like, we tried to get there pretty early. So there's a bit seller. It has a bunch of bits from tons of kits, few different games, mostly Games Workshop. Sells 24 hours the whole time. They have people selling these bits. And there's massive boxes as you go through. They're all basically labeled. And, I mean, we went through a few. And I went through, like, all of the pre-painted stuff, which is usually what I'm after. And, man, everything was either, like, picked clean, probably from last year, or super expensive.
Yeah.
Like really expensive for stuff that, I mean, I've seen and purchased for much less on eBay in sometimes better condition. One model that I was even sort of interested in is the Trogoth Hag, which weirdly is also getting a new kit, which I'm kind of excited about. I bought the Forge World one a couple years ago for like $30, I think, something like that. It wasn't super expensive. It might have been like 70. I don't know. They wanted like 150 and it was like broken in half, like actually snapped at the legs, not like not glued. It was snapped off. So it was weird and disappointing. I didn't get anything this year. And I was like genuinely looking forward to it this year. So, yeah.
Yeah, and in previous years, they've had a lot of old metal models. Like you could get pretty easily, you could get a metal troll slayer dwarf for $4 or something like that. And you just have to dig to find all kinds of cool stuff. Last year, you got those metal goblins from the old goblin chariot kit, and those were like a great start to a video that you did.
Yeah, but, and they were like what, like a buck? I think
$6 for the pair. I think that's what I remember. Okay. But yeah, they were totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Yeah, awesome, awesome models. Like $3 for a sweet model like that. Like I paid a lot more for models I just bought. So yeah, no, it's definitely made sense in the past.
Yeah, but this year it just seemed like there was nothing interesting in the boxes. A lot of just modern plastic sets in plastic bags, like in sandwich bags, at prices that were very close to MSRP. And anyway, oh well, the Bits box is, it's fun to dig through all those kits and see if you could find any gold, but maybe somebody else found all the gold this year. But we'll give it a try next year. It's always fun.
There were a lot of people that showed up on Tuesday, and I think they were already all set up because they didn't have to wait for like the convention hall to set up. So it's possible that there were enough people there that went through them and got whatever was potentially really good. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Speaking of selling out, the Relic Blade booth sold out on the second day of the convention, like pretty early on Friday of the convention.
Oh, I heard it was Thursday night.
Oh, it was pretty bare Thursday night. It was, So Sean and Relic Blade were doing good business. And this year, there was also organized play. There was like a narrative campaign that took up a good chunk of one day. There was a speed painting event. There were lots of demo games going on. So it was really cool to see that, people getting involved with Relic Blade and Sean has built up a nice core of very dedicated volunteers. One dude had a tattoo of, I think it was three Gilblins on his forearm. Like that's awesome. That's awesome. I know you got like your orc tattoo or whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, but orc tattoo is an orc tattoo.
Yeah, have you considered?
It's not a very niche game. That's a full half sleeve too. It wasn't like a little tattoo. This is like a wrist tattoo that says "Wah" on it. This is an orc tattoo I have. No. It's half sleeve.
Yeah,
like it's dedication on a whole other level.
Yeah, it was Apostles of the Deep, three Gilblins, like just jumping out of an underwater trench or whatever. It was sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty rad. Yeah.
So I think that guy was helping run some games.
Probably. He's practically in charge at this point. Sean's just like, you do whatever you want. I don't care.
I still haven't gotten really a tattoo, but now I'm thinking.
Would you?
Now I'm,
so, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now run me through this. Like, you'd go like Relic Blade deep, or
I don't know. It's just one of those ones. Like, wow, I respect that dedication. Like, that's strong. I do like Gilblins, you know. But
yeah.
Anyway, we'll make Sean try to bring some more Relic Blade for next year. And in the meantime, I guess we'll try to hype up some of those other booths. Like, We did enjoy our time at Bombshell Miniatures. You know?
That's true. That's very true. Yeah. Yeah. Got a little sweet looking little samurai mini.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the time may come soon that I get around to painting my totally not Mad Max and totally not Furiosa.
Yeah. I think my favorite model that he has though is this little, he's like tiny scale almost goblin that's holding the wrench. Looks really cool.
Ooh.
Yeah, you gotta check that one out.
I will.
It's a good one.
I will.
Yeah.
What else? Ooh, what I've got here, what I've been holding this whole time is a 3D print. So we ran into our buddy Ramon Jan from DTR.
Yeah.
He's a Hollander from the Dutch, I think. Anyway, what I have here is a 3D print, and he does kind of production of minis.
Production 3D printing on expensive, large-scale 3D printers.
Yes, exactly. And he does the type of printing where there's a layer of the minis, and then it's almost like a skyscraper. Then he prints like another layer of minis above the layer of minis, and then another layer, and then another layer.
You're essentially stacking build plates and creating a new one to start a fresh batch.
Yeah, there's floors to the thing, so you can walk away for 5 hours and come back, and you've printed like four layers, like full layers of miniatures.
How many did he say was in that one? Was it like 200 and something?
Yeah, it was 300. Yeah, it was a lot.
300. Something. Yeah, it was a lot of models in one print that you would normally do one model of at on your home machine, you know?
Yeah. So it looks a lot like what you can do with a home machine, but it's really cool to see the level to which he has this dialed in and to which it really can be production scale manufacturing. And just the way that he's got the supports and everything tuned, like he can just go over to that stack of 300 minis, grab one, rip it off the supports.
And cured minis too.
Yeah, fully cured. The supports will all break off in the way that they're supposed to. The mini will be unbroken. It'll look amazing. And anyway, the sample that I have here in my hand is just one of those examples of what 3D printing can do that none of the mold-based productions can do. So this is a man sitting inside a cage. So it's like a cube. It's a cubicle cage. And so there's, you know, six sides of bars to it. And then inside there's a dude like just sitting in his cage, and all of this printed, like there's no assembly to this. Like it's just,
yeah, it's just a single.
Yeah. If this had been, you know, hard plastic or soft plastic or metal or whatever, it would be at least six pieces for the six sides of the cage, plus however many pieces for the dude sitting inside. You'd have to clean up all the flash and everything, glue it all together. This just came out perfect. And something new for this year, he had a similar model last year, but this year, coming out of the printer, it has a working hinge. The front of the cage opens. Like he just ripped it off the supports, cracked a couple of more supports that were holding the door closed. There's two working hinges, so you can open and close the front of the cage. And there's even a little clip that I've used about a dozen times without it breaking to clip the cage shut again. And I'm like, oh, I just did it again. Open, close, open, close.
And this is a resin printer.
Yeah. Yeah, and it feels relatively durable. I mean, he's got things tuned in, and so it's interesting to see people who are at or at least near the forefront of what this technology can do, just putting it through its paces and showing off where this is going in the future. It's really interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool because they're definitely like, as much as that technology is going to continue to get cheaper, like there's going to be more people buying into these production level machines and being able to do things that we've never seen before. And we don't even really know what those things are at this point. Yeah. And I mean, to come off of a build plate like that, just rip it off the, you know, the supports and be able to snap a hinge closed on a model, like that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, really makes you think. And that booth was pretty near to the Reaper booth this year. Reaper hadn't been at the last couple of Adepticons. But Reaper, for their Bones USA models, has been doing more and more production-level 3D printing. So it's a real thing. Like, it's happening. The models look good. They're durable enough. They're,
I mean, they're as durable as their PVC ones. And they look better. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I actually did get another Bombshell miniature this year. The Victoria miniature that was being sold at the Reaper booth this year was sculpted by
Patrick. Old
Bombshell miniatures. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Pretty neat, I thought. I think so. We're like the last three, but I didn't know that until this year. So
live and learn. All right. So, you know, we did a transition there earlier about things Casey was disappointed in, but
another
way we could have done that transition is other stuff that happened at the airport.
Other stuff that happened. Well, I did say we were going to circle back.
Yeah.
So might as well go into other things you were doing at the convention that then became issues once we hit airport security.
Yep. So I brought my glass slides to the to the convention, and I brought my Dexter boxes. I got these wooden boxes that each hold 50 glass slides, and I brought a total of 100 glass slides with me, just blank glass slides, so that I could get some.
So suspicious.
It's weird. So yeah, I've got my Dexter boxes here. And I was doing the thing of getting samples of metallic paints spread across these glass sample slides so that I can put them under my microscope and be like, oh, huge miniatures uses a lot of mica. Scale 75, mica. Cool.
Right.
Yeah. And so I went to the free paint area, or Fort Wapple, they call it, where just people are sitting around painting minis. And they also have a lot of paints have been donated by companies for you to use. And so I got a bunch of samples from Citadel and I think Scale 75 and just from borrowing from other people, Dark Star, Huge Miniatures, Reaper. And I got exactly 50 new glass slides of paints that I didn't have at home. And was able to take those home and look at them under the microscope and see see what they were using. A lot of mica, but actually one of the interesting things is that Citadel uses more aluminum for the shiny flakes in their paints than I thought. Even all of their base paints are aluminum flakes, but actually
that makes sense. Yeah,
a decent number of their layer paints were aluminum flakes also.
Really?
It was just
that's actually interesting.
Yeah. It was just a couple of their golds that use the more translucent mica flakes. So,
yeah, there's a couple of the golds that have pretty bad coverage that are for layering. They're like layering metallic paints, which is weird. I was actually curious about that. Yeah.
So there's a couple of golds, Gehenna's gold, and I can't remember the other one, but the closest layer gold to Gehenna's gold was also mica. But anyway, where I'm going with this is I got stopped by TSA because I brought my stupid Dexter boxes with me in my carry-on.
That's so good.
So travel mostly worked out well for me because I got to go to the airport with my buddies, Trent and Casey, and they made it through security no problem. But the TSA agent, like my bag just got shunted right to the other lane.
It's like it's on a conveyor, right? And then there's like a little actuator arm that pushes it through a window when it's suspicious. And it's like, now you really can't get anywhere near it. They're like, it's locked down in like a little box.
But actually, the TSA lady they bring you to like the window where you can stand behind the window and be like,
watch them.
Yeah,
you
watch
them. Explain yourself now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The explain yourself window. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she actually let me inside the area where she was working to like show her what it was. And it was the Dexter boxes that shut, that triggered the alarm or whatever. Like, they just, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah.
And close call, because she tried to open the box upside down and spill.
I was watching that too. Yeah. I was just like, don't flip the latch, lady. You need to flip it around. Tell her, Brett. You were just standing there. I'm like, no.
So apparently Trent pulled out his phone and started filming this.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like before you even, like, you were on your way over there and he's like, I'm getting my phone out. I'm like, yes, get the whole thing.
I still haven't seen that footage, but
yeah,
I bet it's pretty stupid.
It's pretty good.
Anyway, they let me go. They released me. Yeah.
Makes sense. After explaining how like blood couldn't possibly be 50 different metallic colors, this is fine.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I know you watched that show. This is fine. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, she started to pull like, doesn't it all just look the same? And I was like, well, yeah. Can I just go?
She's getting curious now. Like I don't know. Time to explain miniatures, paints, mica, and aluminum to you right now.
Yeah. It'll be on the channel. Like, you go check it out.
Yeah. You can subscribe.
Yeah.
Did you hit her with that? You're like,
No.
Yeah.
She seemed like she was pretty deep into her shift, but she let me go.
Yeah. That's good. I can't imagine that, like, in a backpack going through security, it's like, you know, it's this perfectly rectangular box made of wood. They don't know, but it's perfectly rectangular. And then segmented glass panels.
Yeah.
Right? So in an X-ray, that would look pretty suspicious.
Well, it just looks unique. Like, that. It was mostly like, we, you know, they see all kinds of stuff all day long. It's just they didn't know what the heck to make of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can imagine needing to just be like, oh, we need to look at this.
Yeah, but
potential issue.
Yeah, but United decided not to let me have a carry-on. They just let me have one backpack, and so all of my stuff was crammed in there as tight as it possibly could be. And so, something was going to set it off. Yeah,
that makes sense.
But I got home no problems. I was home before you even boarded your flight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. That's the thing, like, because we ended up like parting ways, and my flight was technically earlier than yours, I think.
I can't remember, but
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, you're the man who no longer flies United. Like, he was still sober by the time I got home.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Anyway, okay, what else? What else do we have for the good people? The dear listeners.
One other thing that I picked up at the Iowata booth.
It
wasn't an airbrush, and I do need to talk about this because it's too good not to talk about. So Brett and I came away with a couple of samples of the New Worlds paint from, I think it's from Iowata. So Madea New Worlds paint.
Yeah.
So they're coming out, or they are out, I'm not 100% sure. Just to test them, right, to see, because these aren't normal acrylic paints. They're like water-based acrylic urethane paints. And it's like, okay, you know, paints, a lot of people coming out with paints. But they specifically had two that we were interested in, that is Zenithal Black and a Zenithal White. And the idea is that they can go down like a primer, and then you can Zenithal with the white over the top, right? Sounds normal. But I actually tried the white a couple days ago, and I'm pretty sure if I can repeat the results and this paint doesn't somehow degrade weirdly, it is better than Liquitex white ink through the airbrush.
Well, now I gotta try it. Yeah. So it looks like it was basically super thin version of Badger Steinel Res or like Pro Acryl Primer, like the polyurethane paint, like thin version of those kinds of primers is my understanding of what it is. But it is from Iwata / Medea / New Worlds. And we were just talking to the guys at the Iwata booth, and they had an airbrush set up to try practicing spraying the paint right there at the booth. And they had some stencils and stuff that we were playing with. And as we were hanging out with the booth, like, three different, like, convention goers came and said hi to us, Casey.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually the guy running the Iwata booth, like, clued in that people knew us, that we had a podcast. He clued in that we had a podcast. And and it was actually like, he's go take a couple of bottles from the rack. Mm-hmm. So we do our thing. We get our free samples at these conventions. I put my white, my Zenithal white, and my Deep Bruise purple in my toiletry bag, and TSA didn't notice that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, also, didn't care.
I mean, this might be a crime, but I also got a bottle of Dirty Down Rust in my toiletry bag, and that says very flammable on the bottle.
Yeah,
so
no, that's that, definitely.
That probably actually, like, wasn't.
They ask you that question.
Probably
when
wasn't
you get
chill.
There. Yeah. Like, is anything in your bag flammable? And you go, no.
Yeah.
We want to take a look at your paint sample slides.
Well, just to be clear, I figured that out after the flight, so...
Oh, did you? Okay.
But TSA were more worried about my Dexter boxes, so joke's on them, yeah.
Maybe that's a like an airport security hack. Like, definitely get pulled aside and explain the slides, but put other things in that they just won't care about after that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, never mind. Get through, kid.
Just get through security.
Oh, he's got more paint. Yeah, he's got paint next to his toothpaste. All right, get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. The 10,000th person we've seen go through here with paint. It's fine. but I'm very surprised by this paint. Like, I mean, because I've used Badger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've used a bunch of different kinds of other white to do, you know, the same kind of thing, primers, whatever, but this just goes down ridiculously smooth, and I wasn't 100% expecting that. This is the same paint they sell in, like, craft stores. Like, they have their own section near the airbrushes, but, like, it's not the same paint, same company that is formulating the paint and all that stuff. So it's like rebranded New Worlds. It's this whole thing, but it still kind of looks similar to the other ones. I think Scott did a video on them a while back. Like, he found them in, you know, craft store and then did them. I didn't watch it. I have no idea what his thoughts were, but yeah, these are like the specific to miniature painting ones that they're now doing for their airbrushes. And I think it's interesting. It's one to watch for sure. I did also try that purple, same kind of thing, like really no spotting at all. And it is very smooth, like translucent, smooth, like an ink, but less runny, like an ink is runny.
Yeah.
So much less of a chance for spider webbing. The white Zenithal went down and it was like, I kind of want to just leave it like that. It looked really good. Like, as a model, it's like, maybe I shouldn't paint over this. It just looks good. I don't know.
Well, I want to give it a shot. Like, I got the white to try just doing, you know, Zenithal Prime and making some nice smooth Zenithals, hopefully. But the purple I got potentially to do kind of later in the paint job for the anti-Zenithal application of shadows.
Right, exactly.
Like, just shoot some purple shadows in underneath the model. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what I used it for.
It was looking good, huh?
Red cloak and some skin tone, and just came in from below, and it was like, yeah, this looks pretty good.
Yep.
Like, it's nice and smooth and subtle, so. Yeah, not bad at all.
Well, I gotta tell you, Burt Mabers did not come away with any awards at this competition. Burt Mabers had a slightly above tabletop grade mini to submit, but Burt Mabers had a lot of fun. That's the important thing.
It was looking good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my first ever miniature painting competition, and good to have that under the belt. How about you, Casey? How'd you do?
Honestly, actually, I did way better than I thought I would have.
Yes, you did.
So I ended up coming away with the notable entry and a finalist pin for my Golden Demon entry.
Yeah,
I was pretty happy about that. Yeah, I really wasn't expecting much, but this year they had these cool plaques. Mm-hmm. They had these like Wicked Brick, like acrylic plaques for Adepticon. So that you could like pin your pin into the little foamy backing board and put your card in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they gave these out with the finalist pins, and I thought that was really cool. So yeah, I don't know, like really, really happy about that.
Yeah, congratulations. You should be. That was a nice looking mini. Yeah.
Did all right.
All right.
Yeah, man, it was weird. Because I was just kind of like, I mean, there was a lot of stuff in those cases mm-hmm. this year. So, yeah, even more so, just kind of threw me. But yeah, not too bad at all.
All right. So, I got a hot tip for people. You know, so the Resin Beast, there were four companies that you could enter minis from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Creature Caster, Bestiarium Games, Parabellum, or Eldritch Foundry joined in at the very end. And
right, yeah.
But nobody entered, and as far as I know, nobody entered an Eldritch Foundry mini. And so
I don't think you, yeah, it was like,
because I don't know, when I was reading the rules a week before the event, because that's when I decided to participate, like, they had Eldritch Foundry listed in a few places, but, like, mm-hmm. it hadn't made it all the way through the website yet. Like, on one of the pages of rules is like, yeah, you can use an Eldritch Foundry mini, and that was, like, the only place it said that. My understanding mm-hmm. is that nobody submitted an Eldritch Foundry mini, so there was a point during the award ceremony where they said, mm-hmm. and the best Eldritch Foundry mini... Right. Well, there wasn't one, could so they just been... picked their favorite. Like they,
yeah. they picked a could favorite have been one person going so, away. Yeah.
And now that means next year, that's the... You got to get in on the new companies, because everybody knows mm-hmm. Bestiarium, Creature Caster, Parabellum. Maybe mm-hmm. the strategy is get in on one of those new companies. Check the website 3 days before the event. Yeah. See if something slipped in there. Be like, Crocodile Games is a sponsor. Like, hold on a second.
Just bring an extra model just in case, you know.
That's a joke. I don't know who the fifth company is going to be next year. You keep an eye out for it, though. That's strategy.
Yeah. Speaking of Burt Mabers.
Uh-oh.
So, I don't know if you noticed, but in the Burt Mabers episode... some other people decided that Burt Mabers is now on the level of like Chuck Norris facts. And there are quite a few.
It's a good name. It's a good name.
It is. Like when Burt Mabers paints eyes, they look into your soul. Yeah. When Burt Mabers highlights miniatures, he doesn't lighten the color. The miniatures brighten out of respect. So good.
If this is your first time listening to Paint Brave the podcast,
yeah.
I entered a painting competition under a pseudonym, and to complete the pseudonym, I dressed up in a stupid costume, and the stupid costume with a hood and a fake beard and glasses actually fooled Peter Adams, the co-founder of Creature Caster, who was running admissions, and so it worked. I did it. I was able to successfully be anonymous in the competition, even though part of Peter's job was to change everybody's entry into a number. My entry number was 72, and that's actually all the judges saw, so all of this was actually completely unnecessary.
Oh, that's even better. Oh,
well, no, I was glad
better.
To see it. It's like, okay, good. They've got like a really good system here. This is mm-hmm. great. Like,
that's amazing.
I don't need, you know, Peter telling anybody about, about Burt Mabers.
No, of course not. Of course not. Oh man. I just thought these were pretty funny, and there are a lot of them. And I think at some point probably need to just save them for when they come up again, because at this point, they're going to have to. Burt Mabers is simply too fast for speed paints. That's so good.
That is pretty good. Now, there's the question of whether if I enter another competition, do I reuse Burt Mabers, or do I have to come up with a new disguise? Because now people,
that's a good point.
Now people know about Burt, you know, so.
Switch it up to Mert Babers.
Yep. I also, yeah. Somebody was putting names in the comment section, like suggestions for future names.
Oh,
it was
okay,
like
yeah.
Ernie something. I think it's the Bert and Ernie thing, but.
Oh, that makes sense.
But Ernie, like, just, I didn't even make the connection at first. It's like, yeah, Ernie would be a solid name for a pseudonym. Like, later on, I got the Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street. Okay. Like, that's actually less funny. I just think Ernie's a funny name.
Ernie is a funny name, yeah.
It's like Bert, but, I mean, Ernie Winston or something. Like, I can't remember what it was. Yeah, it was right. Just like, yeah, that'll do. That'll do nicely.
That'll do. Yeah. That's not bad at all.
There's a lot of talent in our community.
That's true. That's very true.
A lot of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got to start thinking for next year too. You know what? You're going to be doing an Eldritch Foundry miniature under the name Ernie something. Those kobolds are coming out.
That's true. That's okay. So
yeah,
we learn all these new things at the convention. One of the things we learned is that in a couple of months, Eldritch Foundry, which is kind of an alternative to like Hero Forge or something like that, but Eldritch Foundry is coming out with the Kobold Race, so you can make custom kobold miniatures for your games or whatever you need them for.
Whatever you need them for.
Yeah, if you like, need just, them to enter a very serious painting competition.
Exactly. I could totally see this happening right now.
Ernie spends 11 months crafting a fine diorama of the Kobold Kingdom. Yeah.
Exactly. Just print them all at like half scale, even. And make this
fit
like
in absolutely
huge,
as many as
like,
I can.
Village. Yeah. Yes. That alone would just be impressive. Like, forget painting it. It would just look great. So in for this.
Yeah, it could happen. It could happen. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have to check back in with Eldritch Foundry in a few months. See how see what their take on the kobold race is.
That's true.
As we've discussed, there are different ways to kobold. So
yeah.
Our buddy Painterly Git gave us some kobolds.
He did.
Yeah,
they're prime too.
They are prime. They are prime. Yeah. I'm around here somewhere.
Yeah, I got them over there.
Mm-hmm.
They're over there.
People like that kobold talk, and Painterly Git is a very generous git. Always giving people candy and stickers, and we got kobolds because we have a special connection.
Right. Oh man. Well, I feel like there was something else we were gonna bring up, and it was important.
Well, I learned for the first time that One Page Rules is working with a lot of the other sculptors in the STL sculpting realm to give rule sets for other sculptors. And that is really cool to see. Like, I can't even remember the complete list of other like STL designers, but
Like Titanforge was one of them.
Yeah.
And that's already huge. Even if they just said, hey, Titanforge is now OPR compatible, that would be huge.
Yeah. I don't know how under the cover that was, but it's out there now. I feel like that's something that was like going to come into effect in the next couple of months, but they were definitely telling people about it at the convention, but whatever.
I mean, I feel like it's not like he was being hush hush about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I definitely saw the boss of Titanforge and the boss of One Page Rules walking around together at the convention. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
People could
we're
figure
just
it
inferring
out.
From that. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But either way, like the idea that One Page Rules could have like you know, a War Scroll, whatever you want to call it, for like a model in a different range that could just slot into an army just because you like that model.
Yeah.
Is kind of amazing. Like that.
That's
that
so
really
good.
Really means that you can do anything with all these things. It's like a home for whatever model that you want.
Yeah.
Could just have rules that make sense, that have something written up about them, that aren't just like you made them up at home. These are like official.
Yeah.
Actual from their stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know if we said it clearly, but the idea is if you an army that you printed and painted from Titanforge is one example, but all of those models will have official rules from One Page Rules for those game systems. So it makes One Page Rules more broadly usable. It gives more value to the miniatures that you get from some of these other STL designers. I think it's a really cool collaboration, and I'm very excited about it. Like
Well, great. Honestly, that it will make me look into other companies if they're on this list of like, hey, our stuff is compatible. We have rules, and they're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will actually genuinely look into that even more because, like, I'm interested in One Page Rules. And I support them on Patreon, and I get their monthly stuff. And I have printed a lot of their models. So, like, there's genuine interest in doing that. And I have Titanforge, but I haven't printed very many of their models because I don't know much about Bloodfields, even though I kind of want to play that.
Yep.
But there isn't enough there that I see month to month that's wanting me to jump into that, whereas One Page Rules definitely is.
Yep.
So the fact that those models could now possibly be something I could play in this game, or even like, oh, I like this dwarf from this other company, and now it's got its own rule set here, and he's a named character or something, but it fits in with my army, like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Look at other companies that then are on that list, you know. Much more interest.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's what we learned from Adepticon. That's a pretty good.
We learned some things.
We did.
I learned that I should probably buy some new shoes like a month before.
Oh yes. Yeah. Were yours too new or too old this time?
Oh, definitely too old. I had the same pair of shoes from last Adepticon.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a mistake.
Yeah, you get some cross trainers and break them in before you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get them like a month before.
Yeah.
Walk around. Yeah. Oh yeah. I did want to mention from Knuckle Duster Miniatures, Gunfighter's Ball is the game. The only other models that I purchased was this set from the Blazing Pistols faction. And they are finely cast metal Blazing Saddles miniatures. Brent has no idea what that is.
I've actually never seen the movie. I've never seen the movie.
Yeah. Never. Shame.
I'm like a regular Scott the Miniature Maniac over here without my. Yeah.
That's up there, actually, with some of that stuff that he, like, hasn't seen.
Yeah, but I've seen all of the things that he hasn't seen except for this one thing. Yeah.
This one thing trumps all of those things.
Yeah, but he also hasn't seen this movie. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Like,
no. I don't know. I kind of feel like
asking
him.
Type in the comments whether you think Scott the Miniature Maniac has seen Blazing Saddles.
I mean, out of all the movies that dude has not seen, this cannot be one of those movies. Like,
well, we say that about every single one. Yeah.
That's true. Okay.
I think that does it for this time, Casey.
I'm just saying, you need to go. I don't care what you're doing right now. I don't care how late it is. You just need to go find Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Anyways, thank you again for joining us on another episode of Paint Bravely. If you enjoyed this podcast, please help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, subscribing to the YouTube channel, and sharing this message with your hobby friends. And as always, we appreciate each and every one of you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time.